Good morning, marketers, and welcome to the If You Market podcast, brought to you by Mountaintop Data. We are the only podcast that markets the shit out of it. I'm your host, Sky Cassidy, and today we'll be talking with Tanner Stolte. God, I hope I got that right, Tanner, of sure LinkedIn did. Selling. He's from LinkedIn Selling, and we're going to be talking about LinkedIn paid advertising. I'm sure we'll touch on some general LinkedIn stuff as well, but really focus here on the paid advertising aspect of LinkedIn. Tanner's a certified marketing insider with LinkedIn. He focuses on B2B businesses that need to increase their share of voice on LinkedIn. Tanner, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, not a problem. Appreciate being here, and thanks for having me.
So LinkedIn paid advertising, fascinating area, kind of. Everybody's familiar with Google Ads, and there's a lot more familiarity with Facebook, but even a lot of B2B companies, LinkedIn paid advertising is kind of a foreign thing. So really happy to have you on to dig into this and explain to everybody how it works, when they should be doing it, where, all that kind of good stuff. Let's start with the very basics. Can you just kind of explain what LinkedIn paid advertising is for the listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. So as you mentioned, a lot of people are familiar with other traditional channels like Facebook and Google. And I'm sure if you're a B2B company out there with any type of ad budget, you've run one or the other at this point. And LinkedIn is similar in the regards to where you have a advertising network where you are bidding to get clicks from users within the platform. But one of the things that makes it unique and a bit different is the level of professional targeting that you get comparatively to other mediums, say Facebook or Google. And that level of quality that you get from LinkedIn compared to other channels is much higher. So, if we're looking at MQL rates, for example, on Facebook compared to LinkedIn, the MQL rate is always going to be much higher on LinkedIn because we can dial in that targeting to exactly who we want to speak to. Do we want to speak to the C-suite? Do we need to speak to directors? Are we trying to speak to influencers in the company, maybe at a managerial level? We can dial in company sizes, industries, job roles such as marketing or business development, and utilizing those layers, we can get a much higher quality prospect compared to other channels like Google or maybe Facebook, where you might not have those same targeting criteria that you can pick from.
They've got more consumer targeting criteria, basically. You can geography, I'm sure you can go by on those, but the specific jobs and stuff like that, you can do their age and all kinds of other consumer stuff on those platforms. But yeah, LinkedIn really has the specific business to business targeting metrics. So is that the biggest difference between the two? I mean, between LinkedIn and the others, you mentioned that it is a click bidding like on the other platforms. So you are bidding for the actual activity clicks on LinkedIn. Are you paying for just the exposure to be pushed out there, or is it particularly click bidding?
Sure. So it depends. Depending on how your campaign is set up, you can be charged by impression. You can also do some click-based bidding as well within the platform. So just depending on the ad style that you choose and the bidding arrangement underneath that, it's either or. So you can run campaigns based on impressions or reach. And in those instances, you're trying to get as many eyes on the ads as possible for brand exposure. But you can also go ahead and bid on clicks if you are doing lead campaigns or driving traffic to your website to get eyes on your primary opt-in pages on your site.
Excellent. And then I will want to touch on the kind of natural traffic that you can generate as well. But main focus here, paid advertising. We kind of blew past something, though. I mentioned in your intro that you are a certified marketing insider with LinkedIn, and you'd recently brought up something's changed with your status there. So just so the listeners know, it's not a random person talking about LinkedIn ads. Can you mention your recent accolades there?
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate you asking. So recently I was noted as one of 55 LinkedIn recognized marketing experts worldwide. So LinkedIn opened up this marketing experts program last year. They took one class of attendees through the first round, and this year was the second round that they opened up for people to apply You had to have references, showcase the work you've done, show your level of skills on the platform. And of the few hundred people that applied for this round, they only accepted an additional 30 this year. And I happen to be one of those 30 accepted into the Marketing Experts program for LinkedIn. So it does come along with certain certifications and accolades along with that. But primarily, it's a means to showcase that, you know, the work we're doing is vetted and trusted by LinkedIn.
Right, which is, I mean, this type of thing, awesome in that everybody's being hit up for every marketing service ever about every random person saying, I'm an expert at this. I can do this for
Sure.
you. We'll generate all these leads for you. And it's all just give us money and we'll, I mean, lately, lead generation, I don't know, it's always been a big deal, but it's gotten insane. And every method of lead generation has just blown up into. I'm suspicious these companies are even companies a lot of the time. I think a lot of them are lead generation for lead generation, like a 1-800 dentist style model, where really they're selling it off then. So you respond to these people, you're probably going to get hit by like 50 different companies that they're
Right.
selling that lead of, hey, these people asked about XYZ lead generation service. So having something to separate yourself and say, hey, I actually know this stuff and we really do it, and there's a limited number of people at this level. That's a great differentiator in a really noisy market.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, LinkedIn as a whole, I think it's still sort of, if you look at the old blue ocean, red ocean metaphor, I think it's still a fairly blue ocean. You know, there's a lot of people coming onto the platform. You know, of course, since the Microsoft acquisition, they've been dumping plenty of money and resources into improving the network as a whole. So you see general subscription rates and login rates rising across the board for LinkedIn. Geez, I don't even remember the they're in the millions and millions, might even be hundreds of millions of users at this point worldwide. And so the network itself is growing, and therefore, you know, the attention, the amount of marketers that are giving it attention are growing as well. And you know, there's plenty of good people doing good work out there, but a lot of times I think you hear a lot of compose or opposing and conflicting strategies, you know, across the platform. Everyone says, you know, lead gen is the way, or demand gen is the way, or content only, or ungate everything. And I think a lot of that leads to the confusion that people see, you know, when they enter the space on LinkedIn looking for help or information or advice. And so, you know, what should I do? Everyone says this is working for them or this doesn't work for them. And all those opposing opinions can get a bit confusing. As you try and navigate the network.
Awesome. So good news. LinkedIn says you're one of 55 people that knows what they're doing and they can vouch for. Bad news, I'm going to make you prove it here on the show today by telling all your secrets to the audience.
Challenge accepted.
So let's jump into the paid advertising. We kind of dusted on what it is. Makes sense. It's similar to the others. You have much better targeting, though. Who should be and shouldn't be considering doing ads on LinkedIn? I mean, not obviously B2B companies. Okay. You're doing that's how your targeting is. But are there companies where it really doesn't make sense because the bids are just too high for them? Are there companies that should be somewhere else? Are there companies that this is really a sweet spot for them right now? Who should and shouldn't be utilizing this?
Sure, absolutely. I think that's a really great starting point when you're trying to look at LinkedIn as a network or a paid media channel for your firm or company. And ideally, those who advertise on LinkedIn should have, you know, B2B is obviously the top one, as you mentioned. To pair with that, I'd say you need to have a service offering or at least a lifetime value that is, you know, four, five figure, like high four figures, low five figures, in terms of, you know, what your cash in door is going to be, or your monthly contract rate, or your lifetime value. As you mentioned, the bids on LinkedIn are higher than other networks. So in terms of like cost per lead, that's going to be three or four times higher than say a Facebook lead might be. Again, the quality is higher, so those numbers wash out in the back end. You might be getting fewer leads for a higher dollar, but there are a higher MQL rate, and your SDR teams, your AMB teams are having better success connecting with them.
Also, the lifetime value is a huge, I mean, on Facebook, people are selling like a $9.99 product. Here, it's
Exactly.
$9,999.
It
So you could
makes a
expect
little
it to be
more
a little more
sense.
expensive per.
Exactly. And usually when I work with a client and someone comes to us for an onboarding call or even just a sales call, we start with those numbers in mind to say, hey, is this relationship even going to make sense? What's your lifetime value or your cash into our contract value? And then we just work those numbers backwards to say, based on average prices of what we see in your niche or vertical, we can expect this to work or not work.
See, this is why you've been certified by LinkedIn. And it's why I like to ask this question in almost every episode, because so many companies, their approach when you say, okay, who should be using your product is anybody. Do you have money? We want your money. Like,
Come
you,
on
what are
down.
you? What's you tell me what you are like, and I'll tell you that you're a perfect fit because they just want your money right now, regardless of whether the product's going to work for you or not. They are the sell snow to Eskimos company, and they're like, we're going to sell you something you don't need. So it's always good to know, kind of let people know you don't need this, or it's not for you, or you're not ready yet.
Absolutely. And you never want to start a bad relationship if you know it's not going to go well. At the end of the day, we want clients to stay with us forever, ideally, and they're not going to stay with you if you set them up to fail from day one. So running those numbers up front is always really important before engaging on any ad campaign. And in terms of who is it not for, as you mentioned with Facebook, low dollar, low ticket items really don't seem to fit well. I haven't seen a makeup brand campaign selling eyeliners on LinkedIn compared to on Facebook, where those things are gangbusters. We probably both know plenty of e-commerce guys who are out there crushing it with Facebook and Instagram channels. But that stuff doesn't really play super well on LinkedIn. Again, most of I've even seen B2C do well on LinkedIn. We have a client right now who runs webinars at the moment for It's for SAT prep, and they spend 10, 20K a month running webinars to parents, and that's a B2C play that does really well for them. So B2C can work on LinkedIn, but their coaching programs cost 9, 10, 15K. So those numbers work out for them on the back end compared to someone selling a cart full of maybe $50 average cart value products or something along those lines. So definitely want to be high ticket on LinkedIn so that the numbers work out for you. Ideally, most of the time, I love to see a budget, a starting budget of 3 to 5K at a minimum. There are firms out there that'll let you spend less. And if
Well, that's per
you're
month budget, right? Not like, hey,
per
we have
month.
3,000 to spend with you, and they come to you. You're like, that's your actual ad spend.
You got it. You got it. So ideally, that's per month. And there are firms that will let you spend less and they will manage less for you, but your expectations need to be aligned. If you're spending less than 3,000, even less than 5,000, your expectations should be aligned with what you are going to get or what you are looking for out of the platform, and the types of campaigns that you're going to run on those types of budgets. Ideally, I love to see, 5 to 10K is a pretty sweet spot. If you are an established, more enterprise brand spending 20, 30, 50K, the world's your oyster at that point on LinkedIn.
And what's the runtime? Let's say somebody says, okay, we can do 3 to 5K, but how long should they expect to stay in before they can start seeing returns from something like that, to decide whether it's going to work out and they should pull the plug or continue?
Yeah, absolutely. Great question. So typically a rollout, say a client comes to us, we have an onboarding call, we decide we're a fit for each other. Our firm will build out the materials before any payment is taken. We'll build out mockups, show landing pages, funnel maps, run through the whole campaign before they even have to start the campaign. And from that point where they say, yes, this looks good, and we launch the ads, we do 60 days of runtime to get proof of concept, essentially. 60 to 90 as our typical window, where we have ad spend hitting the ground for 2 to 3 months, and we're collecting data, testing variants, looking at which creatives are working, checking MQL scores, circling back to the sales team saying, hey, have you reached out to these leads? Have you contacted these leads? What are the conversations like? Are you seeing the right titles? Getting that feedback loop going. So at the end of month 2, 3 is when we want to say, hey, of this 3 to 5K spend that we've been testing with, is there a positive enough signal here? I'm not looking for a six-figure deal to be closed in month 2 and
Right.
3.
Well, some of these companies, many of them probably have sales cycles longer than than that most B2B companies do. And we've seen that before. We've run programs for companies and running email campaigns. And after a month or two, they say, oh, we're not seeing any, we didn't get any ROI on this. So we want to kill it. And then we find out they've got a 6 month sales cycle. And we're like, this just doesn't make any sense. So what do you mean ROI? You can't expect any ROI. That would be insane.
Absolutely. And that's why we look for signal at the end of those 2-3 months. I want proof of concept. Did I at least, you know, get someone to move forward into an appointment? Did sales get one SQL out of it? If we were to scale up these, you know, we'll run projections based on where the lead cost currently is. Hey, if we scale the budget up at these percentages, I'm a big fan of looking at everything through the lens of percents. Because at that point, if you're running a small budget, it may not look like a lot, but when you say, oh man, over 25% of these leads went to booked call, then that means a lot more. And I start running those numbers again backwards to say, okay, if we do this at 10K, we can expect X amount of volume per month into pipeline. So yeah, they usually 2-3 months is enough for proof of concept.
You can look then at what's in the pipeline and the percentage chance of close and stuff and project it out and say, hey, even if it's a year's sales cycle, here's what you can expect. And on those, usually the deals are much larger, so it's probably few enough that you're able to really look at them, talk to the salespeople, that kind of stuff. One thing I've seen is a good indicator for whether you should continue a marketing campaign is you just ask the salespeople if we should continue that campaign. Because if they're getting things that they're going to close, they'll be like, give me more of that. Yes, continue that. They'll tell you which ones they want more of and which ones they want less of. When you talk to the good salespeople, they know. Mm-hmm. They know where the money came from for them.
And I think you're starting to see that tribalism of, you know, marketing and sales sort of dissolve in the modern business landscape. I think all of us, you know, see that you have to have that feedback loop in order for programs to genuinely work and succeed. Marketing can't just say, oh, well, sales isn't closing, not our fault. And sales can't say, oh, the leads are terrible, not our fault.
But once you can track it, then all of a sudden it's not just general branding being done. I think that's what sales hate, when it's general branding by marketing, they're putting things out and you have no idea what's working. Then sales can just feel like, oh, what's working is whatever we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know when stuff comes from marketing that it even came from marketing. They just know they're closing deals. But now that we can track everything, yeah, sales will let you know exactly where to put more money and they'll give you budget and say, take some of our sales budget because we want more of that. Like, just create more revenue. If
absolutely. And anytime, you know, usually I'm checking in at biweekly, if not weekly, with the majority of my high spending clients. And we invite sales to all of our calls. So it's not just the marketing team sitting around the table, it's sales as well. So we can get feedback from the front line on what they're seeing, what they like, what they don't like. You know, are we getting too many of this title through that just don't turn into good conversations? Because you can optimize your campaign all day long on the front end, you know, cost per lead, click-through rate, cost per click, but it's that back-end data that really makes the difference in a winning campaign strategy, saying what ads or what creatives are actually driving those good conversations, those closed deals, those SQLs.
So you guys are managing not just, hey, we set up an ad and it's running now, but you're kind of continuing to work the system and make sure it's running smooth, make adjustments, all that kind of stuff, it sounds like.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that is one of the things that sets us apart from most of our competition. I'll say a lot of people are just ads managers. They more so line up as an order taker, an account manager that's there to say, hey, I built this for you. Here it is, service complete. But the issue with that is if you're just running the ads and you don't have any sales insight or no access to the CRM, or you're not working with the client to help them generate the result they're looking for, clients bounce within that first 2-3 months. If you aren't a consultant that can actually, the pain point people come to you with is they want more pipeline, they want more closed deals, they want more sales at the end of the day, more revenue. And that's really your primary objective to solve as a marketer. You're not just there to build an ad campaign. So if you can advise up and down the funnel, from clicks on the ads to SDR team stats to sales team stats, all the way down to closed one, you have a better chance of getting the outcome that everyone's looking for. And I think that's an underrated skill set in today's marketing environment.
I've got to get away from those kind of questions. Halfway through that question, I was like, I feel like I'm doing an infomercial, and that was a preset question to make you sound good or something like that. Tell me more about how great your company is here, Tanner. Anyway, so if people know that that was just a thought I had while we're talking here. I'm not trying to infomercial what Tanner does, even though it is the topic for today. So you mentioned the scaling of it. Obviously, marketing, anytime we find something that works, then you're like, great, let me scale it. But, and I'm sure it varies from industry to industry, but there's always a ceiling. Sometimes people think, great, now let me put $1 million into this and I'll get this out, and they don't get it and they wonder why. What kind of ceiling do you typically see on LinkedIn? Is there something where you say like, okay, we start out with this, but like, when do you saturate what you can do with ads?
Right. So I'll put a it depends asterisk on that one. Really what it's going to depend on is your runway, your audience size, your ICP, your ideal client persona that you're going after. If you have a runway of, let's say, 50,000 people that you want to reach on LinkedIn, or really tight targeting pool, just for everyone's information, LinkedIn's broad recommendation is around 600K to 50K, like somewhere in that pocket for like runway on your ad campaigns. But let's say you're on the smaller end of that spectrum and you want to unload 50K a month towards that audience. If you're just doing a lead generation campaign, you're going to see a high burnout rate really quick trying to put 50K on one single campaign. So when I'm trying to scale an account to a higher level of spend while still being efficient, that's when you have to branch out to multiple strategies all in one account. So, you know, we like to lean on lead gen here in our agency very heavily. We're big fans of catch a lead, work the lead, close the lead. But when you are at a higher spend account and you have a very tight target, you also need to get into demand gen for the long run, as well as content, which kind of go hand in hand these days. So at that point, when I am starting to reach a saturation, then that's when we start working in blog posts and social proof ads and a couple other mediums that you can use via LinkedIn to influence people into a buying decision. And, you know, at any given point, I'm sure you've seen the stat on LinkedIn, maybe 5% of your market is in a buying process at the moment. The other 95% aren't in market right now to actually purchase something. And the key job of marketers is for us to make our brand, our company, whatever it may be, memorable, so that when they come into market, they think of us, or we're on that short list of vendors for them to assess. And so if you're working those, that tight list of personas at 50K or less, and you're trying to unload a lot of money on them within a month, then that's when you really gotta get creative and pull together a couple different strategies to influence them and get all that capital deployed as needed.
Do some are we there yet marketing with those people, where you're just poking them all the time? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are you ready? Are we there yet? Are you ready?
Sort of in a way. I mean, there
I guess that's what the content does without annoying. That's the purpose of content.
Exactly. And, you know, there's everyone's got their own content strategy and mix that they prefer in terms of targeting, retargeting, cold layers, 90-day, 30-day, 180-day, targeting pools that they'll do. What I like is a sort of top, middle, and bottom of funnel content strategy for the are we there sort of sentiment. So, you know, top of the funnel content will be broad educational material. You know, what is this subject of? You know, what is a data warehouse? And then, you know, the next middle of funnel content is more like how to. Someone who kind of knows what they're doing, but is looking for a little more information on the technical. So how to migrate to a data warehouse, you know, might be an example of that. And then your bottom of funnel content is going to be stuff that people are going to consume when they are close to a buying decision. So data warehouse, migration, buyer's guide 2023, or comparison guide of service providers, something along those lines. And you can use retargeting to sort of take people through that journey of broad information down to, you know, buying decision information. So there's a lot of different strategies you can deploy. I mean, for every marketing company out there, they all have their own secret sauce on, you know, what they prefer in terms of content and things like that. But I think it's really useful in terms of moving someone along strategically through a buyer's journey.
So how much do you get into the, and God, I feel like I'm getting back into what you guys do again, but this is important. How much do you get into the content and all that side of the stuff versus the logistics of setting up ads and placing them and who to target and whatnot? For instance, if a company doesn't really have content to to promote that kind of thing. How are you working with that? Do you have companies you refer people out to help generate that stuff? Do you work with whatever they've got? How does that get handled?
Yeah, majority of the clients that come across our desk have content in place already. I can think of a lot of our work is in the SaaS space, tech space, and a lot of them have been doing blogs for a long time, or maybe they have white papers on hand or case studies they've done. And, for say a lead generation campaign, maybe they don't have a designed PDF just yet. So we'll take a few different blog articles, some research pieces, some testimonials from clients, and make them into one nice cohesive piece that we can do as a, a gated piece of material for a lead gen campaign. In-house, we typically don't write blogs for clients just because they're subject matter experts and we're not. We do have two or three vendors that do SEO specific content writing and strategy plans that we do refer to. But for the most part, in-house, we're handling the setup of the ad campaigns, as well as the management thereafter. Once they're set up, the optimization, the tracking, the analytics on the back end, and then working again with the sales team to determine what's the outcome, what's the success of this campaign.
Are you ever handling accounts that have no content, basically? They're just come sign up for our service. Is the ad?
Very rarely. Typically, and again, that kind of comes down to our interview process before we do that free build out for clients. So we do have a lot of people that come through the website, come through our ad campaigns that may not be a fit. We turn away quite a bit of business, just because A, the level of investment isn't there, to be successful for what people are looking for on LinkedIn, as we mentioned with those budgets. Typically, those that come to us and move through our interview phases into onboarding are those that already do, have a monthly budget that they're assigned that they need to deploy, or they're already advertising on other channels and need an expansion. So a majority of the clients we work with do come to the table with some form of content, in some way, shape, or form.
Okay, so let's say shifting back over to kind of the nuts and bolts, the logistics of it here. Company has a little bit to spend. They're considering jumping into LinkedIn ads. They're getting that email, LinkedIn offering them free ad stuff, $100 in free ads. What can they do to get started? Let's say oh, I want to throw a couple hundred bucks at this and use this free $100 from LinkedIn. What can they expect and what can they do just to set up something very basic and start getting their toe in the water?
Yeah, absolutely. So I like that scenario. I've seen a few of those credits go out here and there. So definitely a realistic possibility for someone to get a LinkedIn credit. First thing I would do before you spend it is get into your LinkedIn account, LinkedIn ads account, that is, and grab the LinkedIn pixel that's in there. You don't have to have spent any money on ads. It's free and accessible to everybody. If you have a LinkedIn account, grab that pixel, throw it on your website, or whatever digital asset you have, whether it's landing pages you're driving to from your Google PPC ads, or whether it's, your primary website, and let that start populating. And once you get 300 hits or more on that pixel, LinkedIn will start to give you back demographic information on the audience. So, let's say that pixel's on your website, for example. You let it run for a couple days, depending on your website traffic, of course. And you hit that 300 mark of matched accounts, and you get in there, and LinkedIn will tell you the collection of job titles that are visiting your website. It will tell you company industries that are visiting your website, average company sizes. It'll actually give you a few company names as well if there's enough data. And what I would do is take that information from the insights and demographics report, build your cold audience using that. And if you have $100 to spend, push that towards a relevant pain-based blog article that you might have for that audience that offers a solution to a pain that they might have. If I only had $100, that's what I would probably do with it.
That pixel, is that related to your personal LinkedIn account or a company LinkedIn account? How do you access that?
So technically, everyone has a personal LinkedIn advertising account. So if you go into I believe it's up in the right-hand side these days, there's a little tile and it says advertise. You click in there. It's always shifting depending on the new UI they roll out, but you
It's
can get
up
in
there. I'm looking at it live here to walk
there.
through it.
There you go. And once you click into there, if you've never used LinkedIn previously, it'll look like it says your own name in there as the ad account. You can go in there and swap that to your company name or whatever it may be, and you can create as many new accounts as you want to. There's no limit on ad accounts you can create. But essentially, once you hop in there, you'll have the menu bar up top. Or sorry, it's actually over on the left-hand side now. And on that left-hand side menu bar, there will be a planning and audiences area. And you get in there, and that's where you can find your insight tags. And you just grab that tag, throw it in the header. That's a little hack that I would say. The LinkedIn documentation will actually tell you to put it in the footer. But more often than none, we actually see that causing issues with tracking or not picking up every conversion because with the code in the footer, it loads last on the page. So if there's any delay, it may not catch it if it's in the footer. So a lot of times I just throw it in the header. It's never had an issue for me. So I would say toss it in the header of your website or other digital assets across the board. And then you just get in the audience section and make a little audience that says, you know, measure everything off of this URL. It picks up all your traffic and you start tracking it from there.
Right. And I think the header footer, that's all about, that's usually on a site, something that gets put across every single page. You can put it on an individual page as well, but then if you want to track the whole site, you got to go and put it on every page. But if you have a specific landing page you want to track, you could always get a, I think you said you can get multiple links, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So it's one piece of code that you'll place everywhere. And then in the audience section, you can denote track this page or all of it.
Okay, excellent. Now, do you know if that tracking is that tracking general website visitors or website visitors coming from LinkedIn and from your LinkedIn profiles?
Yeah, so that would be general website visitors. That's going to capture everybody that hits your site regardless of source. And so that's why a lot of people like to pair it with Google PPC if you're doing Google ads. Because we all know Google has a high intent. Obviously, people are searching for something in the moment, like injury lawyers per se. No one, you know, has an injury lawyer in their back pocket waiting to get injured. They look for it when they need it. But you don't really get to control the quality of traffic that you get from Google Ads. So if you mix together the traffic you're getting from Google, that's your intent. And then you have a retargeting group in LinkedIn that has your professional filters on top. You can recapture some of that traffic over on LinkedIn and know that it's qualified. And that's one of the other nice benefits of LinkedIn is being able to filter traffic that's coming to your website or to your Google PPC ads that otherwise you might not have been able to filter out.
So it seems like major takeaway, if you do nothing else and you have no budget at all, even if you have a Google tracking on your site, and you probably should to see what your traffic is like, putting the LinkedIn tracking is, I mean, it seems like possibly more important than the Google tracking if you're not doing much
Absolutely.
else, you're not doing paid ads or anything, but you want to see who's really coming and be able to measure that stuff. The
Yeah, I would agree.
B2B tracking of LinkedIn versus Google is just, they're going to tell you the audience. They're going to be able to let you know the demographics, or the firmographics, the specific information about who's going there. Like you just can't get off of Google.
And even if you're not going to run ads on LinkedIn, say your company just has zero interest for whatever reason it may be, you're probably running still email lists every month. You're probably running media somewhere else, even if it's just brochures at a trade show. And you can take that demographic information from LinkedIn and use that to influence your copywriting in other areas. If you know that it's CEOs in the tech industry of company sizes 50 to 100 that are visiting your website more times than none, then you can start writing towards that persona, and whether it be, you know, your billboard ads if you're taking those out or whatever else you're doing outside of LinkedIn. So definitely a nice free piece of data and information that you can grab from LinkedIn pretty much at any time.
Could also be a great way to figure out who your actual marketing audience is, because we've seen a lot of people think CEOs are their audience because that's who they're closing deals with, maybe. But what they don't realize is the initial touch and the traffic is a marketing assistant or something, like it's some other title in the company, and it escalates up to the CEO. But the lead comes from somewhere else, from another group within the company frequently, and they're just targeting their marketing to the wrong people. So this can help people identify their target audience a lot better than who are we closing deals with, because sales will tell you that, oh, here's who we want more of, but the lead started somewhere else and you'll never get through to that person, or very rarely. And so they wonder, why isn't the marketing working? Oh, you're starting at the end. You got to start at the start, which is a different person frequently. So that's great.
Absolutely.
It actually lets you know who that starting touch is going to be frequently.
Yeah, and influencing the influencers at a company is just as important, in my opinion, as getting to the decision makers, those who can actually pull the purse strings. Because oftentimes, more than none, the people who are suffering the pain in a company, like let's say you're a productivity software that's marketing to marketing firms or whatever it may be, the people who are boots on the ground, your account managers, your directors of a department, they're the ones using the tools every day, and they say, oh, my productivity software doesn't do this. And when they see an ad for Monday or whoever it is, they're going to say, oh man, that resonates with me. They bring it, waving a piece of paper to their boss saying, we need this because I'm facing this problem every day. So marketing and knowing, who those influencers are in the company and voices that are going to raise the brand up through the ranks are just as important as getting to the C-suite at the end of the day.
Someone else approves it, but usually they approve it because someone below them says, I need this. Yeah. And that's the person with the actual pain point. The CEO doesn't have the pain point, except for I have this pain in the butt marketer that keeps bothering about something that they want me to get. So that's the person you got to, you got to be triggering. So we have one major takeaway here is get that pixel on your site so that you can start seeing within LinkedIn advertising who's actually coming to your site and the breakout of all their details on who these people are. Can you tell us within the actual creating of ads and stuff like that, do you have any tricks, any things that really work or any things that you've seen people doing that are to stay away from, kind of a what to do and what not to do within actually creating an ad to push out on LinkedIn?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll speak to a couple different trends that we've noticed recently. The trends are always shifting. That's why it's great to listen to podcasts like this to kind of get, the most up-to-date resources on what's working now. I think the core fundamentals of marketing always stay the same: strong copy, good offer, right product market fit, targeting the right people. Like those pieces never change. But outside of that, it's the little day-to-day things that shift as platforms update or people's attention spans change and things like that. So right now on LinkedIn, what I'm seeing is square images rock over any other image format. So 1200 by 1200, just a square image compared to your typical horizontals or verticals. Verticals also do pretty well. That would be my second pick if I had to go with an ad shape on LinkedIn. But right now, square seems to get the highest click-through rates, the largest amount of traction in terms of, when we're testing lead gen campaigns, those seem to hit more times than none.
Is there a logistical reason for that, just how they show on the screen, or is it just it's different than what people were seeing so that gets their attention?
I think it's a combination. If you look at it on a mobile device, it takes up a nice amount of real estate when you're scrolling on a mobile feed. So does vertical. So they get higher click-through rates just because they grab your attention, as opposed if you went with the standard older horizontal image that you can almost get two, if not three of those in a mobile feed. So the square takes up a nice amount of space and displays well on mobile.
We're still using horizontal to promote the podcast episodes, so we'll make sure for yours, we're switching to square.
Hey, switch to
All
square. There you go. Have to let me know how those engagement stats go.
right, it's hip to be square with LinkedIn images. There we go.
Hey, there you go. I like it. And outside of that, I think light graphic motion is really nice. So GIF format images, LinkedIn, a few months back now, they released GIFs as a capability. And so we don't use GIF in the traditional sense. If you had to get like Giphy.com, like those repetitive, short videos, but we use GIF formatting more so to create light motion within that square image. So maybe it's just a line that outlines the box or a little pop next to the PDF or a mouse clicking the download now button, like something that's not terribly intrusive or spammy looking, but just light enough of a motion to catch the user's eye.
Draw
So,
your eye in, kind of. So it's more of a graphical movement than a actual cartoon or video movement.
Right, exactly. So that's been one that's been working really well for us too. I think video's making a bit of a comeback if we're talking traditional video on LinkedIn. So, for a while, I think the general recommendation, and it might may even still be, is like 60 seconds or less, 90 seconds or less on video. But I have a handful of clients successfully using video sort of in their social proof layers of their campaigns. So client testimonial videos, product demos, things like that. And we're seeing 2 to 5 minute videos getting full views for $2, maybe $3 with people's ideal ICP fits. And
Well,
I
if
think
it's good, I mean, what I've seen, I stopped letting my kids watch shorts because I realized, oh, they found out if you have a 10-second video, it doesn't matter how bad it is, it's quicker to
Watch.
finish watching it than to move on. So it's just terrible. The shorter it is, typically the worse it is. So if your content's not very good, yeah, make it shorter. But if it's really good, you can have Braveheart. That movie just keeps running and people keep watching it.
Absolutely.
Like
I'm pretty sure Braveheart was two VHSs when it came out.
probably, yeah. Yeah, you have a box set for your content if it's really compelling and people want to be there for it. But yeah, if your content's boring or something, chop it down.
Yeah, so I think video is making a bit of comeback, quality video, and my client testimonials have been doing quite well. A lot of the SaaS products we work with have, those pre-shot, well done client testimonial videos that actually talk about use case and sort of work through some of the pain points that other people might be facing. And LinkedIn even lets you look at full screen plays, so they'll show you how many people actually pulled your video full screen to view it, and it's quite surprising. Admittedly, in the past few months, I've been seeing a lot more long form video engagement on the platform compared to what I used to see.
Okay, excellent. Hey, good content. And one of the things you mentioned early on was the offering. Like, what do you have to have to make this stuff work? Have a good offering. Yeah. You have to actually be offering something that people want if you want to get their attention and get some traction there. What about other little parts of a post? And I guess if you're doing the paid ads on LinkedIn, is it different substantially from a post, or is it basically like a regular post except for you're paying to get it pushed out to an audience?
Yeah, so there are, I'd say the key differences that I see are copy length between a paid post versus a organic post. So a lot of times in paid posts, and we test everything at the end of the day. When I'm going first to market with a new campaign, I have short copy that doesn't even have a see more button to it. I got long form copy that looks like an influencer, style post on LinkedIn. I got medium copy that's maybe a paragraph with a sentence right underneath it. A lot of times on LinkedIn, the paid media side, the short copy wins. In our testing, short to medium, I see long copy do well here and there. But again, primarily it's short versus an organic post. People are looking for more value. I think they're used to seeing those long form posts from industry influencers who are, here are the 5 ways I improved my open rate, or here are the 5 takeaways from this last interview I did with a client. And they go through the bullet point list and it's very spaced out purposely to get you to click that see more.
Yeah.
To
If
get
you're
you to
seeing it in organic, that means you've kind of it's been pushed to you for a reason. You're following that person. It's almost like saying, yeah, the content when you're watching TV, the TV show is long, well, of course, because that's what you're tuning in for. And then the commercials are short. So when you're doing a paid ad, it would make sense that you keep it much shorter since you're pushing this to people who weren't looking for it. Versus, yeah, the organic content hopefully is kind of curated for them to be something they wanted anyway. On that length thing, I see a lot of posts. It's gotten very popular where they kind of do the boil frog technique on you, where it may be a lot of sentences, but each one is like double spaced out. So you read 2 sentences and you're like, okay, I got knock knock, who's there? Now I got to click see more to see who's there. So I'm going to click see more. And then it just keeps going and going, but it gets you in these tiny bites. Is that a technique that's still effective that you recommend? What do you think about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a reason you still see it out there is because it works, especially if you're a good copywriter who can. We call it open loops, where you're reading a piece of copy and you don't quite get that information you're looking for, but you know it's coming. Especially in like webinar formats, we talk about open loops a lot, but it's also pertinent to writing posts or blog posts as well. You want people to consume as much of that material as possible, so you leave the best stuff towards the very end, and you're kind of working them through that journey, as you mentioned, the knock knock, trying to figure out who's there.
Yeah.
And so it is still extremely effective. And the first reason that you always see people do those spaces below their first sentence or whatever it may be is so that you click the see more button. Because LinkedIn, like anyone else, any other social platform, there's an algorithm measuring and watching how much you're engaging. First thing they're watching is hover time over the ads. Do you just stop? You don't even have to click it. But if you're scrolling, you slow down for 2 seconds, LinkedIn says, okay, that's the first point of engagement right there. And so that's where like your imagery and things things kind of have a big effect on your ads from the
So some of
get-go.
that is if you can get right next to an ad just by luck that somebody stops on and you're also stops on your screen, you probably get some it's like having your show come on right after the Super Bowl. Like
Yeah,
it
you
may
get a little
suck,
bit
but
of
you got a
overcome.
huge rating somehow.
And so then once you click that see more button, that's that next piece of engagement. And LinkedIn says, hey, people are clicking see more. Obviously, there's something they want here, so this must be a good post. And it starts pushing it to the network. Now, on the organic side of things, it's a little more about frequency and consistency with social media posting on LinkedIn. So you can kind of go into LinkedIn and look up everyone's little algorithm guides that seem to come out once a quarter on, what the proper frequency is, with Tuesdays at 9, Wednesday at 3, and Thursday at 5 based on network traffic and things like that. So those are a lot more dependent on you building your own network and your personal engagement on the platform as well. So if you're only posting on LinkedIn and then bailing and not going through and commenting on other people's posts, liking other people's posts, connecting with other members, your stuff really won't get pushed all that much. So you kind of have to do all of those at the same time if you want your own content to start getting traction.
So that you're wondering why am I not getting more traction? It could be that LinkedIn's seeing you as just trying to use the system, not being part of the system. So you need to actually go around and interact with other people and act like a human more than potentially just a marketing bot that's just there, post, there, post.
Absolutely. And so then again, you can go through and type in the LinkedIn search bar, like posting strategies, and a bunch of different influencer strategies will come up. And the common theme is the engagement that LinkedIn wants to see. So usually if I do a post on LinkedIn and my profile is no huge influencer profile, but if I do a post, I'll hang on LinkedIn for another 15, 30 minutes. Surf around, make some meaningful commentary on a couple posts that I like a few other people's things, and you can go in your own profile and watch the impressions of your account go up and down. And the days that I post and do engagements, those impressions rise dramatically. And then say the weekend where I don't engage at all on the platform personally, because I like to, try and keep things pretty separate. You'll see the engagement on my profile just almost flatline on the weekends, and then Monday picks right back up.
So it's
So those
almost like they're rewarding you for being active on the platform. Like their algorithm is actually saying you're part of the community, so we'll show you more. And if you just, again, come in and try to use it, we're going to tamp you down a bit.
Make a
What
few
about?
con Yeah, you make a few connection requests each day. If you find a post helpful from someone that you're not connected with, send them a connection request. Say, hey, really appreciate that post. Looking forward to reading more. Those connection requests I send get accepted 80% of the time versus people who are, just trying to get connection requests and they pitch you right in the connection request. Like,
Right.
hey, we sell data lists to 99% of marketers and our quality is an A plus rating. Would you like this now? And you don't even know them. So meaningful engagement is
Well,
really
they
what.
usually say, I saw your profile and we have a lot in common. We should connect or something like that, something generically. And then they follow up immediately with the here's what
Start
we're
hitting you with.
selling.
Yeah, we call it pitch slapped internally. You just get pitch slapped right off the bat.
Now, what about if it's if that engagement helps and we're on to we're back to we're going on a little discussion on organic traffic here. What about the tools that people use where they're going to request connections with people and do some auto activity? Would those tools actually help with your post engagement because the system sees it as you being on there and active?
Yes and no. I'll say the connection request automation software is helpful in terms of building your personal base of connections that you have, but then it's still on you as the user to go in and make that meaningful commentary and engage with other content on the platform. If you are only doing connection requests, majority of marketers in our space now, they'll use an automation tool. Send out a blanketed connection request to, let's say, 100. You get 10 of those people to accept it. You start working those 10 through a messaging sequence, and maybe you're doing a little warm up and then pitching message 3, 4 in your ABM campaigns or whatever it may be, or you're putting them into your advertising campaigns. But in terms of getting your organic posts and material really flowing and getting more engagement, LinkedIn wants you, the user, out there engaging. It's not terribly concerned with just connecting with others. It wants to see you being a good actor on the platform and, adding value to the rest of the platform.
Right. So it could help some if you're doing maybe not trying to run a lead gen through one of those tools, but just a low volume daily of outreach to select people to connect. But then you also need to do some follow up, either a tool that'll somehow do that for you, or yourself go follow up and interact with people and content.
Absolutely. And there's firms out there that do that for hire where they're purposely just building your voice on LinkedIn. So they'll say, hey, you're at 500 connections now. Give us 6 months and we'll get you to 5,000. You give them your ICP. They go out there and, farm those connection requests as much as possible, put a content strategy behind that where they're getting in once or twice a day to do engagement rounds. And then maybe you have two, three posts going out a week with the appropriate structures and hashtags. And well, I guess I shouldn't say hashtags anymore. Those are going away. But
Ah,
in
that
general.
was going to be one of my next questions. What about hashtags and links and how you use those? But before we get to that, you mentioned these firms, and I want to put out a warning to people. A lot of the firm, just like you're verified by LinkedIn, there's probably some firms for that are also have some sort of, hey, this is a legitimate company. But there are a lot of companies, because LinkedIn is flooded with fake profiles, and a lot of them are created by companies. Just like you can say, I want 2 million Twitter followers. There's companies out there that'll give you 2 million Twitter in the next week because they have a ton of profiles that they'll just connect to you. And then you have all these fake bot. There's tons of fake bot LinkedIn profiles too. So be very careful when a company says we can put your stuff through the roof. They probably can with a whole bunch of fake things. And LinkedIn is onto this kind of thing, and it could actually hurt your exposure instead of help. Just like some of those bot tools for outreach, if it's not a good tool, LinkedIn recognizes you're using a bot, and that'll act, and they'll hurt you instead of help.
Yeah, absolutely. And account lockouts are a real thing. No matter the agency you deal with, you should definitely question, their strategy, their cadence, their methodology. Anytime you are researching an automation tool for LinkedIn, do use caution. When engaging with them, there's a right way for them to do automation, and there's a wrong way that can get your accounts locked out. And LinkedIn is actually in open lawsuits with, I believe, three or four different automation tools that violated their community standards that they found to be practicing on the platform. So LinkedIn is definitely aware of that type of activity, that type of traffic. And I think you can kind of liken it to Google SEO. Back in the day, everyone just used to do dirty backlink building as much as possible, a lot of black hat SEO. And then over time, as Google matured, they really put the smack down on all of that, and all those sites that used to rank came crashing down, and they had to redo all that work. So I think
Which is
if you
good, because
build.
you want the good players to get rewarded, not the people who cram a bunch of, hidden text into their site or something like that and have a crap
Exactly,
product.
exactly. So I think the sentiment's the same on LinkedIn. If you're going to build a base, a foundation of connections and a network on LinkedIn that you can work to derive business from, it's best to build it the right way from the start so that long term you have a really strong foundation.
Yeah, and stay away from companies that promise massive success with things like followers fast, because those aren't going to be real people. It's going to hurt you. Moving on to the what was it? The hashtags and links within posts and within ads. What's going to help and what's going to hurt you in that area?
Sure. So interesting enough, and I just saw this come out last week that hashtags are starting to be depreciated. I didn't see an actual timeline on it, but some of the functionalities on the platform, people started noticing them being taken away. And then a few other folks noted that they heard from support teams that hashtags are going away. So part of an organic strategy and almost everyone's organic posting playbook was add. I believe it was 5 to 6 hashtags was the common recommendation around common subject matter. So it could be searched and also show up to other people using those hashtags. But now that's going to be depreciated. I think it's more so going to be around keyword content. If I had to take a wild guess, just seeing some of the AI tools that LinkedIn is starting to beta around the platform, they are scanning text and making recommendations. So I imagine as hashtags become depreciated, it's probably going to be more of a keyword recommendation from like an AI tool, if I had to
So you
guess.
don't have to replace them with anything. They're basically saying, you're not going to tell us what your content's about anymore. We got AI that's going to look at it and we'll tell you what it's about.
Yeah, absolutely. And for now, I mean, I still see plenty of people using hashtags, but I've actually personally run into a few issues trying to put them into a promoted post. I will say hashtags in a paid ad, that is a known, like, it doesn't help whatsoever. We just had a few posts on our social, our core company page that we wanted to include in a few social proof campaigns because they were nice pieces of content and we just wanted to put a few ad dollars behind them. And when we tried to submit them, the hashtags broke the ads and actually came out as raw code. It was odd. And similarly, when we went through chat support, they said, "Hey, sorry, hashtags aren't supported at the moment." So it
So
was kind
don't
of.
need, that's great. You don't have to bother to hashtag your paid ads.
Yeah, no, not at all. It adds zero value to your paid ads because the paid ads are already going directly to your ICP via
Right.
your targeting parameters. So they're not going to show up in a LinkedIn search bar or anything like that.
Right. The point of the hashtag is to help in the natural searching, but since you're pushing to your specified audience, pointless and, as you said, can hurt your ad. What about links? There's, you know, people don't put the link in the ad itself. You got to put it in the comment with a paid ad. That's kind of a weird thing. Does it hurt to have outside links? It seems like if you're paying, LinkedIn should be cool with it. I know in the natural posts, they want to keep you on the platform.
Yeah, absolutely. So my go-to, I always have a link in the top copy. So traditionally, let's say I'm running a lead gen lead forms campaign, for example, and that lead form keeps the user right there in the window to collect their information. But let's say it's a medium piece of copy and they have to click the see more to finish reading it. At the bottom of that top copy, I'm also going to have a link to a landing page. And the reason I like doing that is testing over the past few years, I've noticed that we'll catch an extra 10% of leads off that landing page who are looking for a little more context around whatever the offer might be, that I can't give them everything just in an ad and a lead form on LinkedIn. So having a landing page in addition to that gives them some more bullet points to consume, you know, maybe some testimonials from a client, whatever it may be that I can add to the page for social proof. And we'll catch another 10% or so of our leads off that landing page. So from a paid media perspective, I don't see links hurting my ads at all. In fact, we purposely include them in most of our campaigns.
Excellent. There's so many things to cover here that we're starting to run long, but there's two things we normally get to. I'm going to skip over one of them because we're already covering your company a lot and what you guys do. So I don't think we really need to dig in, although, you know, I guess give people a brief on, hey, here's what we do and here's the company name and whatnot. I haven't been saying your name and the company name enough, but LinkedIn Selling is the company name, not just words that we're using to describe what we're talking about here. You may have heard it in the episode already and thought, that was weird wording. It's the name of Tanner's company and Tanner Stolte. Is that
Yeah,
again?
Stolte, as if there's a Y, but no
There we go.
Y on the end there. And you can visit us at linkedselling.com. And we have a few different offers on our site if you're looking for just free information. We have plenty of our best guides for free download on there. Or if you're looking for a consult on if LinkedIn ads are right for you, feel free to reach out to me directly, Tanner Stolte on LinkedIn.
Awesome. Oh, I
Probably
want to get to that stuff in a little bit. I still have a couple more questions for you. I'm going to keep you as long as I can. There's just too much
Please
here.
do.
But before we get back to kind of how the paid ads work, I did want to focus on you a little bit and just get a little bit of your story. I mean, growing up, you probably weren't like, when I grow up, I want to be a LinkedIn paid ad consultant since none of this existed. So what was your pathway from to where you're at now, being, you know, one of 55 people in the world that LinkedIn certified for this.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if I had to look back over like the long arc of time here, I was actually in marketing courses in high school. It was an elective that we could take. I thought it was interesting. Primarily, they sold me on a trip to Disney World. And when you're, you know, a
Well,
freshman in high school, you're like, well, I want to go to that class, that's for
that's
sure.
marketing. They use marketing to pull you in.
Exactly. And so I actually took marketing all 4 years, decided that's what I'll go to school for, went to college and got a degree in marketing. And from there, when I got out of school, I think as a lot of marketers end up doing, I accidentally got into sales, looking to get into marketing. There again, fell for some good marketing where people said, "Hey, we need product representatives."
Yeah. You apply for a marketing job, what they do is end up putting you in a sales desk. And you're like, wait a second, this is post-marketing. Don't worry about it. Make some
Exactly.
calls.
I thought I was going to be an account manager, but you know, no one
Yeah.
wants to be called a salesman anymore. So I ended up selling Kirby vacuum cleaners door to door for about a year, and that was a great fun sales experience. Built a lot of thick skin and like general personal, you know, skills in terms of how to sell a product to people. It was, you know, in hindsight, a lot of pain-based selling, belly to belly, which was great. I really credit that time with a lot of my personal marketing skills and abilities. And from there, I got a few opportunities at smaller marketing firms and learned a lot from my mentors early on. And I was very big in the info marketing space when I first got in, really cut our teeth on Facebook specifically, following out like Dan Kennedy, GKIC material and content. And from there, it sort of just evolved. A lot of our clients on Facebook were in the B2B space, and inevitably, our firm got bought out by a LinkedIn specific outreach company out of St. Louis. And at that point, we just started getting into the LinkedIn realm a whole lot more because our skill set of direct response style marketing in Facebook really needed to be applied to LinkedIn for their clients. And so we started taking our skills and tactics from Facebook, seeing what worked and didn't work on LinkedIn. And geez, that was 6, 7 years ago at this point. And back then, LinkedIn was a death sentence. I did not want to take a LinkedIn account whatsoever because the plat Microsoft really hadn't done a lot with the advertising side of things. Costs were so expensive, inconsistent results. It was just tricky to extract good, meaningful, consistent.
So it wasn't, I would think it would have been really a buyer's market because it wasn't saturated. But you're saying it also just wasn't mature enough to work well.
Exactly. Early days were hard. I mean, there's plenty of people who are getting results out of it, but I wasn't one of them. And over the years, as we matured along with the platform and we ran more and more campaigns, you start to find out what works, what doesn't work. And the platform itself just got heads and tails better than what it used to be. And we were able to consistently now produce results to the point where if someone comes in and I do an onboarding, I can usually quote a price pretty close within 10, 20% of what I think it's going to be. From where it was to where it is now, that's sort of the journey we had to take to get here.
Nice. Now you mentioned getting pushed into sales, and I was joking about like, yeah, that's just what companies do, and it made me think, oh, maybe that's what they should do. Like everybody in marketing should have had to spend at least a couple months in sales, particularly in that company, to know what's going on there. It makes you probably a better marketer for in many instances. There may be some
Absolutely.
copywriters or something like that where the skill just isn't there, but make them spend a week at least.
Yeah,
And
and
it's
I mean, I've even seen the inverse happen where, account managers have gone over to sales in smaller firms just because they need someone to hold a spot. And, maybe they lost a salesperson or the org changed or whatever it may be. I've seen account managers make wonderful salespeople because they can talk the talk and walk the walk. They're the ones doing the work. So when a client comes in, they can actually be a consultative seller to that client and figure out a solution that's going to work for
I've seen them move when they see what the commissions are for the salespeople in their company, and they're like, "What the
them.
hell? We're not getting any tips here. I'm not going to be a cook. I'm going to be a waitress." Jesus.
Yeah, oh, the grass is always
But
greener
they're
until the quotas come due.
yeah. They say, "Can I go back to marketing now? I didn't hit my
Yeah.
quota." Okay. Let's see. What do you see coming in the future? I mean, you hit the hashtag thing. That's nice. I like that. That's a plus not having to do that anymore. What else do you see coming in the future for LinkedIn and how people are going to be able to market on it? And part of that, when do you see the buyer's market running out? I mean, how much longer do you think it's going to be a good deal for B2B on LinkedIn? They'll always keep it so it works and all, but there's this phase where you have the gold rush. I don't think we're there anymore, but we're still in a pretty great spot for LinkedIn ads. How long do you think that's going to last?
Yeah, absolutely. In turn, I'll speak to the gold rush and then maybe some future things you can expect out of LinkedIn. So we get to play with a lot of betas and things as well in our agency just for the different clients that we manage. And so in terms of the gold rush, I think we're still very early on. I think right now is where you see a bunch of new agencies popping up left and right, giving their own opinions on what strategies work best. And as LinkedIn, if I believe it was last year's keynote for Microsoft or the year before, but the Microsoft CEO put LinkedIn as one of his top three like bullet points on his presentation for growth and focus for the next like 5-year plan, I believe he was talking about in that presentation. And so I think you're still in the early days of the gold rush, and I think there's plenty of runway left because as the user base grows and there's more inventory for us to bid on, costs should come down in theory. Now, it just depends on how much other auction competition and a couple other factors, but more bidding inventory, the better. And that's kind of the effect you have on Facebook, who has billions of users across the globe. The inventory is vast, and you can get clicks cheaper, conversions cheaper, all that stuff. Whereas LinkedIn, the inventory isn't as great. So if Microsoft continues to push the platform, truly try and grow the membership, I think you can expect, fairer wins, if you will, in terms of price per lead, cost per click over time. And, there's always going to be new agencies coming and going, but I think it all washes out in the end. The good ones stay, the bad ones leave. And I think the cream of the crop, always rises up to the top. So I think there's plenty of runway there. In
The
terms of
good ones
fee.
stay, the bad ones leave, the worst ones just rename themselves and keep getting that first payment.
There you go. Just get rebranded to another firm.
Yep.
In terms of some of the updated features that you're going to see, of course, we mentioned AI. There's a couple different AI tools that they're leveraging. You start to see it in LinkedIn, in the paid media, where it will recommend ad copy for you. It'll scrape your page or whatever it may be, even social posts. LinkedIn now has AI-generated articles that they're putting out, where they're asking for different people's opinions to contribute to the article that an AI bot wrote, which is kind of interesting. From a paid media perspective, they are rolling out betas on connected TV devices. So you will now be able to leverage LinkedIn layer targeting. So, say you want to reach CEOs and tech companies, but send it to their smart device where they're watching Hulu. So you'll kind of get that
Wow.
capability of advertising very specifically to the, instead of having to do the broad sweeping net advertising that you used to have to do with connected devices, you'll be able to get a lot more specific now.
So B2B targeting on a consumer platform, basically.
Exactly. Knowing that you're going after a B2B consumer because they are a part of LinkedIn's first party data that they
Yeah.
have, which is pretty
So
cool.
the AI thing, it's kind of cool. You see, you go on, like they implemented it. It used to be people would say, what, how are you using AI? And it would be hard to come up with actual examples. You say, oh, the map, the Waze software, it's not MapQuest anymore. Waze is actually using AI. And you're like, okay, like I don't see, I'm not speaking to Hal. Now we're actually talking to Hal when we're on these things. And LinkedIn has a post where it just start typing or draft with AI. And I think I played with this the other day. Is there any way you recommend people prompt this, or should they just play around with it? Like, how can you get results out of that right there? Just have the AI make something up for me type of a post.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a game of iteration. Absolutely. I don't have any master prompts that are going to get you a perfect answer. I haven't dove into it that far. But typically, I'll start with a basic prompt, get the answer, and that'll sort of tell you how to refine your next prompt. If you realize, oh, it left out some of these key points, you can go back and say, give me this same prompt, but also mention blank. And so it's more so I when I've been playing with it, just iterating on my own questions a little over and over has been my main game.
I would say don't tell it to make it funny because it's not good at funny yet. Its idea of funny is way worse than a dad joke. It's like a computer dad joke.
Next level.
It's pretty bad. And I've also noticed I can recognize certain messages where I'm like, this seems like an AI. I've seen some email
Absolutely.
content, particularly fraudulent content that looks like AI. And at first you think, oh, this is English as a second language. And then you're looking at the wording and you're like, no, this is like too sterile. It's a little
Yeah,
different and it's
absolutely.
AI.
I think some of the tech of the future is AI detection, and I believe there's a few firms that already work on that. I've seen a few LinkedIn posts here and there, but right now I think it's easy for the human eye to tell, what's AI and what's not, especially in the business world where people are looking for specific content or solutions to a problem or going to look for a blog. I think it's hard to spin out AI content that's, perfect enough for someone to read for a shot. Usually, the people I see using AI these days are either in basic chatbot answering services, getting easy FAQs knocked out, or if your in-house writer is using AI, it's a starting place, and then they are working that content
Right.
from there.
You can punch it
Okay.
up, make it human.
Exactly. So that's where I see it being used a lot in the business space, is just give me a base, a starting point, and then a lot of writers are working off of that.
Excellent. Any last tips or comments or whatever for people on using the LinkedIn paid ads?
Yeah, absolutely. Do
Do
it.
it. That's a great one. Short, sweet.
In
Yes, you
there.
should do it. Try it out. The advertise icon in the upper right corner. Click on that,
Absolutely.
play
And yeah,
around.
my inbox is always open. If anyone's running into issues on LinkedIn, I'm more than happy to throw a quick opinion out. I always do free audits all day, every day, for most accounts that we work on. So if you have been running LinkedIn ads and just not seeing the results you're looking for, I'm always happy to throw an opinion in to the mix.
Yeah, reach out to Tanner, what, on LinkedIn,
You
on
got it.
the site you gave it earlier. It's
LinkedIn.
linkedinselling.com.
Yep, linkedselling.com.
Or linked selling. I'm sorry. I'm saying LinkedIn. We'll have the link in the show notes, but linked selling would probably safer just to hit Tanner up directly on LinkedIn. Then you know you're getting something, or go through the link that we put in the show notes, and you'll make sure you get to the right site. I bet you there's a lot of companies with similar domains that are not necessarily a place you want to go as a company. It seems like the type of domain people would do different weird spoofing and have some garbage
Yeah,
site
grab
for.
all the misspellings.
Yeah, the hotmail.com with a typo and you get a totally different site type of a thing. Trying to get something from you. Okay, excellent. Yeah, well, yeah, check out the show notes at ifyoumarket.com, and we'll have more information on Tanner Stolte there. And give us a share on social media, subscribe, like, all those kind of things. Check out our LinkedIn post to help us boost those things up. And on behalf of the IFY Market team and Tanner Stolte of LinkedIn Selling, thank you for listening to the IFY Market podcast, where we believe if you market the shit out of it with LinkedIn paid advertising, they will come. Are you looking for new leads or always in need of quality contacts for your marketing campaigns? But list companies and online tools are the worst, right? Well, then you've got to check out Top Data Search by Mountaintop Data. At Mountaintop Data, we're a team of weird people that actually like getting our hands dirty with sales and marketing data, and we specialize in business contact information. We compile and maintain a database of tens of millions of targeted high-quality business decision makers with emails, phone numbers, mailing address, and all the information you need. Go to topdatasearch.com and request a free account with the promo code IYM1000, like if you market the podcast here, and get a free account with unlimited searches, no seat fees, and 1,000 free record download credits. That's topdatasearch.com.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.